I was thinking though, like randomly, like just a little smack thought I was just thinking of. Like, isn't it crazy like how we just came and just like took over animals' land? Like, not like it was a real shit, like, because like where I work at is like, oh, it's like kind of like near like a wooded area, and it'd be like little birds and shit be flocking all the time. And it's like, imagine like if aliens, like, do you believe in aliens first and foremost?
Of course,
Okay, all
nigga.
right.
I mean, shit, the Roswell lives in my veins.
Okay, so imagine aliens like, yo, I see your little industrial park.
Little establishment y'all niggas got
We're
here.
gonna blow this shit up and create an intergalactic gas station. You know what I'm saying?
Damn, so you talking about basically if aliens ran niggas off the block like Marlo did Avon's people in The Wire and shit.
Exactly.
Running them niggas off the prime corners. You know what? That's the wild part because these niggas can do that shit whenever the fuck they feel like. I feel like they just up there chilling, smoking they space blunts, just waiting on the right time, like just waiting on Trumpito to start firing off nukes so these niggas can just swoop in. What's that nigga that used to be on Twitter talking all that bullshit?
I respect females.
I respect females. So the niggas, so they just swoop in like them niggas and just and take the earth from us. And you know what? Honestly, we deserve it. Human beings ain't shit.
Oh no. Oh no, we definitely deserve it. Our time is limited. And that's why I'm trying to get as far as intellectual and as weird as I can, because I need to link with these aliens as soon as possible, because I'm trying to survive the initial destruction of Earth and play two, like, not even 2K, 6K25 with the homies.
I think you'll be safe. I think you'll be safe. Jaden Smith would be safe. You know, people of that nature. But I, you know, for the rest of us, unfortunately, man. You know, for the niggas that cannot drink a bottle of Mad Dog 40. I'm sorry, Mad Dog 2020 in 40 seconds. You know, it might be a wrap for us. So we'll see how that shit go. But first and foremost, we back. Your boys is back in the building. This is episode six of be episode six of
Chase.
Beware the Ills. Once again, I am so happy to be here because I feel like, you know, my 7th grade English teacher who tried to send me to detention for all the time because I didn't fuck with that classical European bullshit that she was trying to force into my woke consciousness. I feel like she believed that I could never get here to
Right.
episode six of a semi burgeoning, bubbling under popular iTunes podcast. So you know what? Wherever the fuck you at, Miss Reed, fuck you. All right. I want to start the
Nice.
podcast by saying that.
That's a very strong, very
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
set up
Yeah.
yes, a nigga like, wow.
We coming in with the Lomachenko shots.
I can
All
tell. Jesus
right.
Christ. Yeah, well,
I'm
I mean, you
sorry.
didn't even get a chance to introduce yourself. He was going in on some niggas like Voltaire. I enjoyed Voltaire. I don't remember what it's about, but I just remember it was like, this shit ain't terrible. But,
I'm sorry. I'm a little bit hype right now. I ain't even turned. Like, I'm not even like this ain't even the Schmiz, you know, pod. I'm not nowhere near platform Schmiz in 3/4. I'm a little hype because I am going to see Day 26 tomorrow in concert. And you know what? I deserve to be hype. All right.
I don't even know what to say. Like, I would respect this if you were doing this, say, in the mid 2000s.
You know what? I fucked up and I didn't go in the 2000s when I should have. So now I'm trying to make it up, which means I'm gonna probably end up being disappointed. But
Oh,
16-year-old
clearly.
Austin, who was in the hallways of St. Peter Chanel High School, singing "Since You've Been Gone," that nigga, that simp ass nigga, this is for him. All right, this is this so I can let this, so I can purge that shit, so I can let that shit out. And you know, I can you know, people always talk about like taking care of your younger self. Remember that little dude you used to be, take care of them. Well, you know what? That's what I gotta do. You feel me? Even if that means throwing on, you know, a shiny Rockaware jacket, you know, some Rockaware boots, you know, a little Aeropostale, American Eagle, you know. I'm gonna do what I gotta do.
I have so many questions that I really want to ask, but we don't have the time to get into it at this time. We got an action-packed pod with a lot of non-day 26 content for you guys. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is Beware the L's, your favorite podcast. I myself ain't that Wes on all social medias. My name's Wes. My new name is Dick Dastardly. For all my Hanna-Barbera people.
Shout out Dick Dastardly. That nigga was dastardly as fuck. I can definitely say that.
With the homie Muttley, always there. Muttley. let's see. I didn't do my research, but you can hit me up on Black Planet for my woke and unwoke sisters. I'm available. If we want to talk to the African diaspora, we can do that. If you want to talk love and hip hop, we can do that too.
My man's is very versatile. So ladies of Black Planet, ladies of Plenty of Fish. Also, you can also find Wes on there.
Let's see. Christian Mingle, J-Date. I got the yarmulke on deck. I got the two-tone yarmulke coming out this summer.
FarmersOnly.com. Basically, anywhere where you know, there's easy access to random spontaneous hookups, that is where my boy Wes will be posted at. So ladies, seek this man out. But in the meantime, while y'all getting yourselves ready for the West train, you can go ahead and follow me on all social media. My name, at Uptown Ace Boogie. I've gone by a couple different names now. What was my last one? Tyrone Lannister, Jeff Benzos, my new one, Kingsley Shacklethot. Shout out to Harry Potter.
Go ahead. One of these days, we're gonna have a nice Potter discussion because I'm very passionate.
Oh yeah.
There's
a whole section of Black Twitter that is devoted purely to Harry Potter. So definitely any Potter fans, y'all want to come on and have a poignant discussion about, you know, the use of Expelliarmus, or if even you want to discuss how Harry's Expelliarmus, which for all intents and purposes is a random, maybe an 81 on 2K, how his Expelliarmus can go head up with Voldemort's Killing Curse. I don't know. Y'all want to discuss that one day.
Harry was getting some. Yeah, we gotta discuss Harry, because Harry is not your hero. Harry is not the guy you want to die
for. Nah. That's another story for another day. But Harry. I won't go as far as to call that nigga a fraud. But I am not marching. I'm not marching.
We get close.
I am marching arm in arm, into battle with that nigga. He is not my Jon Snow. All right? He is not my Malcolm X. All right? That's for damn sure. But also go ahead and follow the pod itself at Beware the L's. Any questions, suggestions, ideas, thoughts, reviews, criticisms, go ahead and send it to us there. And thank you for all the love that you have shown us over these first five pods, especially on episode 5, one that we felt very, very good about. And it's nice to know that, you know, y'all kind of echo some of the same thoughts. So we appreciate that. You can find all the back pods, episodes 1 through 5, on YouTube, SoundCloud, and on iTunes podcast at Beware the L's. Now this week, it's been a lot going on in the country, politically, pop culture wise, the last couple weeks. So we definitely got some low key intense topics that we want to get into for y'all today. But before we get into anything political, anything social, you know, anything revolving around shit that actually, you know, makes you got to get in your bag and think about it. It's been long enough, niggas and niggettes. Avengers, by the time y'all hear this pod, Avengers would have dropped nearly a month ago. So I don't want to hear none about y'all spoiler alerts. It's time.
Oh, no. If you, you haven't seen the movie, you're a square. You need to move to Zimbabwe or Madagascar or some shit like that, because you don't belong in civilized society.
I don't know if I like the assertion that there's no civilized society in Zimbabwe. You know what? That's what Donald Glover was talking about on This Is America, which we will get into a little bit later on this pod, Wes. But
we should see my music video. It's called "This Is How I Fucking Feel." And I'm gonna say it. Shout out to Zimbabwe and these hoes.
But Avengers, man, definitely got to get into it a little bit. And I mean, I think obviously the thing that stands out first and foremost is Thanos is every bit of a motherfucking bully as we thought he was gonna be. That nigga is Debo. He is the nigga from The Karate Kid. He is all of that shit mixed up into one, and he took your faves. He took your favorite Marvel heroes and made them niggas look like crackheads, Harlem shaking on the block.
It was very reminiscent of when you're a child and you are just playing with your dad or with a bigger cousin. You're hitting them, they're just laughing. They're just enjoying it. It's like, you know what? He thinks he can do something. And that's how it was with all of Earth and Asgard's greatest heroes. They thought they could do something up against this big, grimace-looking motherfucker.
Grimace like a motherfucker. And there's so many different directions. There's so many different aspects of, you know, the movie that we can discuss. I think, first of all, I want to start by saying I think we all went in with the expectation that Wakanda was gonna be so lit, and Black Panther was gonna be that nigga, and he was gonna lead the charge, and blah 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 blah.
Speak for yourself. I
definitely had the expectation that after the unparalleled success of Black Panther, and they said that there were some rewrites, including to get the OG Winston Duke some more lines and some more scenes in the movie. But
need that.
I think we all kind of had an expectation, and there were kind of like little bits of information that were leaking out saying, oh, well, Wakanda's going to play a very large role in Infinity Wars. You know, specifically the idea that maybe the Soul Stone was located in Wakanda. Nah, Wakanda was just the battlefield for Annihilation. That was it. They could have did that shit in Brooklyn. They could have did that shit by the towers in Baltimore. They could have did that shit anywhere, but they had to go to Wakanda to show just how little control Black people have over universe changing events. I felt like that was a shot in the gut, man, to us.
I went in there with expectations. As soon as I start hearing the little rumors and such that Wakanda would play a big role in the film, I knew that Wakanda would be destroyed. I'm pretty sure I tweeted out, I hope you all enjoyed your time looking at Wakanda, because Wakanda will be there no more after my dog Thanos comes through. And that's essentially what he did. They the big penultimate, not penultimate, the big ultimate battle of the film was in Wakanda, and the vast majority of Wakanda was damaged by Thanos and his little weird homies and their pack of weird dogs and shit. But one aspect I kind of wanted to touch on was kind of the Marvel is doing a pretty good job in the last two films, Black Panther and Infinity Wars, of kind of having villains or antagonists with kind of
with
good, not good,
actual,
good, with not even actual, just like good.
Yeah.
Good reasoning for behind why they are the way they are and why they're doing the things that they do.
So
Thanos, he watched his home world get overpopulated and the resources ran out. And
Shout out to Titan,
and was unable to sustain with all the people and lack of resources. So for him, his whole goal was to make sure it didn't happen again. So he wanted to kill half the universe. Why he chose to do that in that fashion doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I'm sure he
could. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of plot holes that we can get into, but we ain't about to go there. So. Yeah.
the general idea kind of made sense, but the way he went about it was I think was a little off. But I shout out to Marvel on their stepping up their writing game for their antagonist.
Oh yeah, I think that's a big part of, you know, superhero movies, because superhero movies really, a lot of times, they don't really have nothing to do with the hero themselves. It's got more to do with, can you make a compelling villain, a compelling sympathetic villain with, you know, with actual depth, with actual legitimate motivations to kind of make you say, you know what, I understand. Maybe I don't agree with it, but I understand. They did a marvelous job of that, obviously, with Killmonger. To the point where I still believe that Killmonger wasn't wrong. He was wrong for the way he went about it, clearly, but just, you know.
Yeah, his ideas were correct. I'm definitely team Killmonger was right.
You know, and, you know, Thanos, you know, kind of similar, you know, kind of speaking on something that is also a real world, real life problem. And Black Panther also mirrored that, you know, in a lot of ways. And it kind of, you know, mirrored a lot of, you know, social issues, and specifically issues, you know, that divide and polarize the Black community, you know, just in terms of, you know, there was light skin, dark skin debate. There was, you know, how much should, you know, the, you know, more developed countries, America, Black people, how should they, you know, how much should they intervene in things that are going on in Africa or in other places across the world with, you know, African people as well. So, you know, and that just, you know, those subplots made Black Panther such an excellent film. And, you know, Thanos, again, something that we deal with in real life, overcrowding, over, you know, population. And we hear so many conspiracy theories all the time about population control and, you know, X, Y, and Z, and whether the government is really out here trying to control the population. Hey, what's up, FBI nigga that's currently listening to Beware the Elves? Actually, it's probably two FBI niggas listening, my FBI nigga and your FBI nigga, so shout out to both of them.
Big shout out. Probably, if I can keep it real, it might even be three. It might be one individually for both of us, and then it might be one just on some new internet stuff. So shout out to you guys. If you want to come on the pod, we're open and available. Just hit the inbox.
But you know, whether that's really true or not, the idea of overpopulation, the idea that we are on this planet, the way we, you know, running through the cold with our woes, we are gonna run out of natural resources. You know, and not just fuels, we're also talking food. Population is growing entirely too fast in order to have enough safe food for people to consume. Cause, you know, niggas can eat cancer boxes all day, cause that's what the fuck we about to have, to be completely honest. So, it's something. Marvel is thought provoking. You know, DC is just kind of, it's kind of dark and brooding and action, and I'm a good guy and you're a bad guy. And
I feel like DC tries too hard to do what Marvel is doing. I feel like they're trying to put forth the effort of, oh, we're so deep, we're so thoughtful, we're so nuanced, when in actuality your villains suck. Superheroes kind of suck too. Yeah, shout out to Batman.
I mean that shit is DC movies are as about as nuanced as, you know, a nigga in a club with Timberlands on. Ain't nothing nuanced about it. That shit's pretty straightforward. So, you know, but the aspect that I kind of wanted to hit on, obviously the movie itself, you know, really good movie. Obviously, niggas was heartbroken at the end. I mean, that Spider-Man shit still giving me nightmares, man. Peter ain't deserve that shit.
Oh boy, that was tough. Like, I was cool because I went in with the mindset. I knew people was gonna die. I was hoping a couple other people who stayed alive would have been the ones to die. but I was prepared to lose people, but I was not prepared to lose the people that we did lose.
You know, and shout out, damn, man, that's just, Mr. Stark, like, God damn it. I don't feel so good.
I don't feel so good. I said, me either, Peter.
Shout out to the I don't feel so good meme. Shout out to all the Thanos memes as well. Again, Twitter is just a wonderful place. But, you know, the thing that I did want to, you know, touch on really quickly is, you know, we felt for, you know, for Peter Parker, you know, just a young bull. All he wanted to do was be an Avenger. All he wanted to do was earn Iron Man's respect. And this nigga just hopped on a spaceship and just went out into the middle of nowhere on a school day. Just, you know, just because he's a real one.
Couldn't have been me.
But on the opposite spectrum, you know, here at Beware the L's, you know, it's our podcast is centered around the L's, and a lot of these L's could have been avoided if it wasn't for Peter fucking Quill.
Star Lord.
I can't even dignify him by calling him Star Lord.
That's his name, and this man got upset. I'll comment a little bit later, but go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
So there were essentially two, you know, in terms of L's being taken in the movie. Oh, there were Thanos handed out L's from the beginning to the end. Loki, it's R.I.P. Loki. Hulk, that nigga Hulk, he fucked that nigga up so much he don't even want to come back out.
He gave Hulk a couple punches, a couple slams, and Hulk was good. Hulk said no. Hulk yelled no.
Hulk,
I don't want any smoke.
Hulk is that kid on the block that comes out, gets his ass whooped one time, and he never comes outside to play again, essentially.
Yep. You think he moved? You think he no longer lives in the neighborhood, and you like just see him randomly walking down the street a couple years later? I thought you moved.
No, I was just fixing something. So, so that's Hulk. Loki, obviously, just L's all over the place. That nigga caught T'Challa with a mean hook. That nigga was basically out of commission for the rest of the movie, like until he got erased. So, you know, the L's were plentiful, but the two in particular are Peter Quill and fucking Wanda, Scarlet Witch. Wes, I feel like you could give a lot more emphasis to this point than I can because of your viral tweet. So will you please discuss Scarlet Witch and her role in Infinity Wars with us, please?
Listen here. First off, shout out to Elizabeth Olsen, who I just found out was an Olsen sister.
Just kind of blew my mind. A non-cocaine one. I'm sure she's had plenty of cocaine, but she just, you know, doesn't.
I don't know if I'm going to go ahead and label her non-cocaine. She's a Hollywood actress. But so Wanda, first and foremost, Vision, when he switched to human form, started having feelings for Wanda, and she had feelings back for him, and so they started doing some weird little robot sex. Free bands. So then early when we first see them in the movie, they're in, I believe, Sweden or one of those Nordic countries hiding. And then eventually comes to the point where they are attacked, and eventually the point comes up to where Vision says, just kill me, take the mindset on my head, destroy it so Thanos can't get it. Kill me now. But and so Wanda's like, nah, I'm good. I wanna keep you around because I love you. For me, I'm taking the glizzy and putting it right to that mind zone. We bucking, because there's no need to keep something that we know the big antagonist guy who's the toughest person in the universe is coming to get. Why are we keeping this around so he can come get it and rule the world? So my conclusion was that Wanda enjoyed Vision as some sort of sex doll, big super-powered dildo.
Shout out to the human vibrator, JR.
Essentially. God damn it.
It always comes back full circle.
Always comes back to Dirty James. God damn Dirty James. But yeah, so she chose to not destroy the Mind Stone. Would have definitely made the movie a lot shorter. Yeah. Because she wanted to keep him around for, I assume, would be some sort of sentimental reasons, which I can attribute to her sexual desire to have sex.
Point blank, you don't love that nigga. That nigga's not a thing. He's a stone. He's a stone in a robot.
He's half stone, half stone, and half Tony Stark's computer program. Nigga's an app. You let Thanos win because you couldn't stop fucking an app.
That's it. I mean, I'm sickened. Yeah, and you know, there was a theme in this movie of niggas not wanting to destroy stones. We also talk about the whatever stone Dr. Benedict Cumberbatch had. Which one was that?
The time stone.
Tony, of course.
No. That's the. I don't remember. One, it was the Green Joint.
Whatever.
It might have been time stone. I think it was time. Either way. Could have been destroyed.
Tony, a big T, Robert Downey Jr. being a real nigga he always is, pulls up and is like, hey, nigga, we need to destroy this stone. No, I'm here to protect it. I don't know what type of UGK pocket full of stone shit these niggas was on in this movie. I don't know if they just wanted to collect the shit for themselves or whatever situation was. But those two events also combined with, Star-Lord getting in his feelings, essentially, finding out, after Thanos killed Gamora. And honestly, I don't know who's still really checking for Zoe Saldana in 2018.
This nigga took it past the movie. Goddamn.
Yeah. She's had a couple Sage Steel moments on us, and I'm really kind of cool on her in terms of how she identifies herself, which we will talk about very briefly coming up really quickly. In terms of how people identify themselves. But he basically, for those of you who haven't seen the movie, too late, we're giving you the whole plot. There was a scene on Titan where Guardians of the Galaxy, shout out to Big Dave Bautista as well and his fantastic comedic timing.
Yeah. He was one of the joys of the movie. He made the movie enjoyable.
For sure. And basically you got Iron Man, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, shout out to Doctor Strange, sidekick nigga.
Wong was in one of the first, battles in the movie, if you haven't seen it. And, he said, I'm gonna head back to the,
head back to the crib. I got some food in the oven and shit. I'm waiting on the cable guy to come and shit. Y'all niggas go ahead and take care of Thanos. My nigga hopped through a portal and we ain't seen him for the rest of the movie.
And was out. He said, y'all get down like this over here? Nah, I'm good. I'm gonna stay. I think I got a package coming, so I don't want to just drop it off and leave it at the front door. So I just gotta be there. You know what I'm saying? So I'm gonna hang out. Who else was at Titan? Mantis was there.
The hideous Mantis. Yeah. The Guardians, Mantis, Iron Man, Spider-Man, and Doctor Strange. I think that's everybody I remember on the top of my dome.
I believe that's it.
Basically, they came up with a great plan because Tony Stark, fucking genius, and they had a plan to get essentially take the Infinity Gauntlet off of Thanos. To snatch the gauntlet off of his hand. Which would basically reduce his power drastically. Now, that still don't mean them niggas could have boxed with him straight up because they couldn't have. But if
hands.
You are able to essentially remove the Infinity Stone and all the, extra powers, that comes with it, or the Infinity Gauntlet, then, if you can take that off, the combined force of the Guardians with Spider-Man, with Iron Man, might have actually been able to stop that nigga. But, of course, they told him, hey, my nigga, chill out, whatever you do, Peter, relax, chill, my nigga, chill, this is for the universe. And my nigga got in his feelings over Zoe Saldana, who played a terrible Nina Simone in the biopic. I have not forgotten about that.
I may have to contact Zoe and let y'all niggas run the page.
Tell her I want all the smoke. All the smoke. All right. Well, not specifically with her, but I will fight any male tribute that she wants to provide.
Exactly. Yes.
And essentially, my nigga lost it. He lost it. Couldn't keep it together. Started drinking a little bit, and decided to he wanted to start turning up on Thanos, which gave Thanos the minor opening. Gave him the Devin Hester in open field kickoff return opening that allowed him to essentially retain the gauntlet, whoop niggas' asses some more, and then peace the fuck out. And that it was movie changing. It was movie changing. Yeah. You know,
that could have, like you said, that could have made the movie a lot shorter as well, because Thanos has a chance to get defeated. He's not super all power in 4 anymore. There's no need for Avengers 4. We're on to the next movie, but I will give Peter Quill a hint of sympathy, because I was saw on Twitter. I personally have not had no Green Lady in Green Lady parts, so I can't speak to the potency.
The potency of green box. Okay.
And the sheer, but I don't know. I don't know what that is like. I don't know if it's better than regular box. I don't know.
I ain't never had that shit before.
I'm saying, so I can't completely judge him 100%. Like, I can judge him like 99%. Like, yo, you fucked this up for real. But that 1% is like, yo, you might have done it for like honorable reasons. Like, this could have been life changing. Yeah. Life changing experience that you was getting on your little ship.
It's also fair to say that we've never been faced with any universe, potential imploding events or choices. So it's hard to say what you would do when you in that situation. So I give him that, but in the end, we lost half of the entire Marvel universe because of him. So no passes 2018.
Yeah. It's when I saw him fade away, I was glad.
But another thing that also really bothered me was the fact, and listen, we all know who the MVP of the movie was. It was Thor. He was the first unanimous MVP. Came back down from a 6-1 deficit. Nigga got a brand new eye. Got a brand new axe. And he took that.
New eye, new X. I'm pretty sure. I think I checked the stats. I think he went 29-9-7 for the season. So he was definitely, he deserved the United States MVP. Came down at the Battle of Wakanda and turned the fuck
but
up.
With that, though, I'm not mad because then it was so lit. But with that, that was also part of the problem. There's nothing that I hate more than white saviors, which, you know, all types of, you know, writers and directors and everything feel like they need to inject into their movies in order to make it more attractive to the mainstream. And, you know, so that the white man can leave the theater happy. Like, you know what? The golly gosh, the good white guy came in and saved all those niggers. What? 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 What a guy. What a guy. That is so. And that's exactly what Thor was. Thor came in when the niggas was getting their ass whooped. And Thor came in very Deus Ex Machina style, pulled up with Stormbreaker, and teed off on Thanos. Now, did they need him? Yes.
Very much so. In this instance, I am actually glad there was a white savior, because it would have got even uglier if not for him. But yeah, like you said, you spoke to
it's off-putting, especially after what Black Panther was. Now, I'm not saying that Black Panther needed to be the guy that turns up on Thanos, because that's not realistic. But it's also not realistic for Captain America to catch a fucking punch from Thanos either. Yeah, I didn't see T'Challa or M'Baku catching punches from Thanos either. So again, there's always going to be that little, you know, that posturing to make sure that the literal embodiment of Europeanness, the Nordic blonde-haired Thor, to come in and be the white savior. But speaking of white saviors, there's a particular woman who also tried to be the white savior of black people, and she has
Hell of a segue. I don't know where you're going with that one.
And she has a documentary right now that is very popular on Netflix called A Racial Divide. And we are talking about the one and only Rachel Dolezal.
Hold on, that's the title?
Yeah.
Yes. That's a fire title. That is a fire title. I can't even front. God damn.
Now, I viewed, you know, this doc in its entirety. I don't think Wes did for a second. So we have very different takes on the Dolezal situation. I will say that the documentary did a very good job of placing the balance between making her look like, a villain, cultural appropriating villain, and a sympathetic figure. They specifically went very deep into her backstory, discussing, her upbringing, her essentially being in an abusive environment with her, lily white parents who adopted on some Angelina Jolie shit, adopted four black children because they literally said that black children are easier to get than white ones. So they adopted black kids just for that particular situation. And essentially being in an abusive environment. And once those black children came in to her house, which, the house with Rachel's biological parents, her brother, and her, basically coming into a horrible situation that she felt like she needed to get them out of, and she felt like she needed them to be in touch with their culture, and through them trying to make sure that they're in touch with their culture, her basically discovering that she's quote unquote transracial. Shout out to Atlanta, shout out to Retro Spectro and the Lean Squad as well. If you have never seen that clip, just Google Atlanta transracial. It is some of the funniest deadpan comedy you will ever see in your entire life. Hey, officer, that's him. That's the right guy. I've never seen that guy from Ryan
before. I've seen him before.
And actually, I think the most interesting part of the documentary was just how, we even, with her being the president, becoming the president of the Spokane chapter, the NAACP, how, her heritage and her lineage, even, I won't say heritage because she has none, how her lineage even came into, how it even came into question was basically really fucked up story. Essentially, one of, the adopted black children that were adopted by her parents got sexually abused by her biological white brother. And she came out later on in life when she was older, she came out and, went to the police with the allegations. Obviously, her parents sided with the brother. Rachel kind of sided with, the adopted black sister, and ended up coming out and telling her story of the brother sexually abusing her as well. And all this came out because the brother hired a private investigator to dig up dirt on Rachel to try to discredit her testimony during the trial, during the sexual assault rape trial that he was on for her and her sister. And through that, that's where the private investigator, discovered basically that she's been trying to pass herself off as black for a long time, even though she's had white, lily white parents. So I thought that shit was wild as fuck. Just how shit just ends up coming around like that. But I guess to sum it up, I felt really bad for her children who, she's got a newborn baby. She's got a son that's in her teens. She actually adopted one of her brothers as well. And they got shit rough because of her, essentially. And, I'm all for, being able to identify with what you feel, what you feel you are, especially when we're talking about, LGBTQ, transgender, issues. If you feel like that's what you are on the inside, then, go ahead. Do what you got to do. Basically live your best life. But I got such an issue with this as being a man with a black studies degree. I got such an issue with this because obviously you can't. That's one thing. You can feel like a man, you know, born in a woman's body. You can feel like a woman born in a man's body. But what you can't do, and you can, you know, go through the change, you know, in order to, you know, have your outward appearance match, or, you know, your physical, you know, makeup match how you feel on the inside. And that is, you know, obviously what you want people to do. You want them to live their truth, live their best life, and live out exactly who they are, free of any type of, you know, persecution. But young Rach, what you can't do, you know, you can't change, you can't inherit struggle, which is, it is, you know, throughout the entire documentary was the narrative that everybody posed to her. You can feel black. You can feel like you identify with black people. That's fine. You can go out of your way to help black people. Like, I mean, some of the founders of the NAACP were white. The NAACP couldn't have been created without white people. You know, just in terms of getting that overwhelming support that was needed to create such a major organization during the Jim Crow era. But that's what you can do. There are, you know, NAACP representatives all over this country that are white. So why you felt like the only way you could instigate change was by trying to literally pass off saying, I am black, not I feel black, not I wish I was black, not I identify as black. You saying I am black, and after you got caught up is when you started switching up. And you know, they kind of went through the timelines of all the shit that happened, you know, from the very beginning, you know, to her, you know, to, you know, her getting ran up on the block, like, hey, heard you not a nigga, what's up with that shit? To, you know, her, somebody asking, hey, is this your father, a black guy? Like, yes, that's my father. You've only known him for 9 years. Well, you know, anybody can be a father, but not everybody can be a dad. Bruh, like, you feel me?
That's what she said?
Yes. She said that verbatim, word for word, quote unquote. And just really quickly, because I know you about to, you know, fire off some shots in the air like like AR-15 girl from Kent State. I feel terrible for her children. Her teenage son is very, he seems like he has some, you know, some social issues, some social, you know, awkwardness. You know, he's very, very reserved. You know, really scared to even go to school. Feel like he can't go to school because it's always somebody, you know, hollering, talking some shit. He didn't even feel comfortable going in a barbershop. And as a black man, we know that the barbershop is our haven.
Safe haven. It's a community center.
It is a therapist's office. It is anything and everything you need it to be. That, and when you don't feel safe at home, you go to the barbershop. All right. So for a young black man to feel like he can't go to the barbershop because of how people look at him or how people talk about him, that's where, you know, as a mother, you got to step up and do the right fucking thing. And the narrative played out through the entire documentary of basically he was getting fed up. And here's the thing. He loves his mom. He loves his mom a lot. And she, for all intents and purposes, appears to be a very loving, caring mother. But there are two very, very, very big issues with that. One is that somebody else mentioned she doesn't know our struggle. And she, you know, far too often in speeches and during events and everything else, try to identify and try to once again inherit our struggle through her sons. Even if she didn't, you know, intentionally inherit that, you know, try to use her sons to push the narrative that I'm black, I get it. On numerous occasions, she, you know, basically played the, oh, well, I understand because I have black sons and I love my black sons. So, A, that's fucked up. And B, by the end of the doc, her son was like, listen, all she has to do to really fix all of this shit is say I'm white, which she never did. Not any time throughout the process when she got caught up, or any time throughout this 2 fucking year, 2 year time period in which they were filming a documentary. She never said, "I am white." She couldn't say, "I am white." And you can do so much more by saying, "I'm white, but I want to help," instead of saying, "I'm black," and lying and alienating any black person who potentially still with you. And it was really fucked up to see how her children and everything were struggling so much because of her. So at the end of the doc, she didn't learn shit. I implore everybody, you know, if you have a second, to definitely, you know, go ahead and watch it. But she didn't really, it's like she didn't learn anything. She didn't really, you know, she didn't have a revelational moment. She didn't repent. She cut off all her hair, threw on a wig with some locks on it, and went to the DMV and legally changed, went to the city hall, went to the DMV and legally changed her name to something African. And that was the end of the doc. So Wes, go ahead.
Like, I don't even have a whole lot to say about this because this is so simple. Like I am for everybody, like you said, to delete this, kind of like set this off. If you feel a certain way, however you feel, you should be able to express that and feel comfortable feeling how you feel. But as far as racially, you are born a certain race, a certain ethnicity. And although you may grow up with people who are different from you and live somewhat of a similar struggle to them, you aren't going to experience the exact experience that being a different race entails. I definitely grew up with some people who aren't black, some white homies and some Spanish homies who went through the same struggle and stuff that I did, and I consider them allies because they endured what I endure. But what Rachel's doing is completely ridiculous. Like, you're white, and like you spoke to, like, you're white, you can go ahead and say that you're white and help do the same amount of help that you're doing, almost even more so, with being white and having access to different resources that you would as a quote unquote black person. So for her, she's wilding. You would think that, I didn't know the complete aspect about her kids and whatnot, so you would think that you would be the bigger person and it's not going to be about you anymore. It's going to be about your kids and making sure they're comfortable, making sure they're in the best situation to succeed, feel comfortable, and become the best humans they can be. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, I don't have kids, but I can imagine that's what you would feel you would need to do in that situation. So stop wilding, Rachel. Just be white and help people, continue to help people.
Yeah, and it's really easy. Like, it's I mean, not the situation is not incredibly easy, but she was just so adamant, like I said, throughout the entire thing that I can't make myself not what I am. I am a black woman. I am blah blah blah. And then there was also like a moment where she was in the hospital after she just gave birth to her new child, and she didn't know like what to put for the race of her baby on her birth certificate. Like, you get what I'm, or not on her birth certificate, but you know, but on the newborn forms. And it's just like, bruh, say what the fuck your kid is. Cause we didn't see the child's father. So we have no idea. I'm not sure what race he actually is, but yeah, she just like, oh well, yeah, I don't know, you know, I'm gonna make sure my baby don't get whitewashed, and I'm still black, and blah blah blah. But I know that falsifying documents is a federal crime.
Okay, you falsifying your life. What are you doing?
Exactly. So there's a lot more that, you know, a lot more, you know, like finer, you know, aspects and intricacies of the documentary that we can get into, but it, you know, it would help to just to go watch for yourself and form your own opinion. And this is, again, this is not this ain't even a slander. You know what I'm saying? Like, this ain't here. I ain't here to slander, slander the woman. She didn't call enough L's on her own, honestly. This is just more to make a statement to, not just Ms. Dolezal, but, you know, anyone in general who, feels as if, blackness, is something that you can decide that you want or decide to be. Y'all didn't want this shit in the 1600s, 1700s, and 1800s. Yeah. Y'all didn't want this shit in the 1900s. Okay?
No.
Y'all went out there with us picking in the field. Drake voice. Okay?
they don't even want it today. Yeah. They just want, well, not even they, but she just seems to use it. Well, she wants to use it all the time, but nobody wants to be black all the time.
I mean, but you know what? You are starting to notice more people who are trying to, again, inherit that struggle, but it's almost like they want to do that to try to prove some shit, to try to prove how centered or how woke or how socially conscious they are. And they do really, really, some people, is obviously, it's not as big a, you know, margin as the cultural appropriating Kardashian types. But there are people who really, really want the whole black experience, but you're not black, okay? You're not black. And it's so crazy because we are so low on the social totem in this country in terms of our perception, yet and still, nobody wants to be, you know, white. Nobody wants to be Asian. Nobody wants to be Latino. People want to be black. People want to be black so fucking badly, yet and still, they still don't seem to understand everything that comes with it. And she took cultural appropriation to the highest level. I'm talking about, she is the Michael Jordan of cultural appropriation. They just want to sit here talking about Bruno Mars and the Kardashians and people like that. Nah, she is six rings.
I was going to say, from what I've heard, like from what I've known, and then what you just said about Dr. Mary, it sounds like she had her 73-9 season. It sounds like,
yeah, facts. And I don't know. It's just it's really disheartening. And you know, she, honestly, to be clearly honest, I think her trauma that she suffered through her childhood has caused some deep psychological issues, to the point where there are things that in her mind that's quite frankly delusional, that she doesn't understand. And in that, you know, we talk about abuse all the time here on Beware the Ills. Through that, in that aspect, I feel for her. But when something like this comes out and you got your kids telling you, hey, Ma, like, you know, we need you to do something. And you got everybody in America, you know, from regular ass people on social media to, you know, to politicians and, you know, educators, all the way, you know, from the bottom to the top, saying, hey, ain't nobody telling you to stop living your life. Ain't nobody telling you to, you know, even pull yourself, you know, from out of the black culture. Just understand that's not what you are. And
yeah, you can have the same impact. You can live the same type of life you're living. Just acknowledge who you are and move forward. Simple.
That's it. But, you know, Rachel, you know, if you're listening, you know, anywhere out there, just do the right thing. Do the right thing for
do the right thing like Spike Lee.
Do the right, man. Such a great era. You about to take me off on a tangent that's going to end up having this pod going for 3.5 hours. So I can talk about the Snap Music era until I die. All right.
Greatest time since, I would probably say, ever.
Ever. But the circumstances around, you know, Rachel Dolezal and her, you know, unparalleled cultural appropriation, whether she had good intent or not, the circumstances around, you know, that are it is what we face in this country, you know, every day. We face, you know, just outside of the realm of the blatant racism or even the, you know, the subtle racism, you know, even the people that want to help or, you know, or even the people that, you know, are not, you know, oppressive, still act under the guise of white privilege or being a white savior. White privilege is being able to choose that you're black. That is the definition of white privilege. Being able to say, you know what? I don't feel like being white no more. I'm black now. We can't do that. We can't say, you know what? I want to be white today. Nah, bruh. Like, so, you know, it's...
Get your black white ass smacked.
So, I mean, it's you know, obviously the dominant, you know, hierarchy, the dominant group being able to basically come in and take what they want in terms of our culture, or, you know, do what they want or identify as they want in terms of even as terms of something as deep as, you know, our race. And unfortunately, this is America. And Donald Glover understands that better than anybody else right now. This is America. New song premiered a couple weeks ago on SNL during, first of all, before we even get into the scope of this America, Donald Glover bodied SNL, a show that it takes a lot for me to watch these days in 2018.
Oh yeah, I usually don't watch unless it's a host that I would watch in something else, like go out of my way to watch something else. So Donald Glover definitely was a situation where I had to tune in and see what my man was
acting,
doing.
It pulled a double duty, acting and musical guest, which is very fucking hard to do just in terms of time. But he premiered such a powerful record, powerful imagery during on SNL, which is one of the longest running, you know, shows on television, might be the longest running show on television. He debuted, you know, something powerful, something that's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. And he took his platform. And we talked about this all the way back on the first or the second pod when we discussed Donald Glover and Atlanta and his impact on the culture. And he displayed it. He didn't care how it was going to make anybody feel. He didn't care how uncomfortable it was going to make white people feel. He took it and he debuted it on the biggest platform possible, just like Beyonce, you know, in her Super Bowl performance and things of that nature. And he took it and he was like, America, I don't give a fuck how you feel. This is what's really going on. And this is how I'm gonna make my voice heard. And, you know, as of this pod, I believe This Is America has reached 129 million views, 132 million views. It literally just released about 2 weeks ago.
And I believe the song itself is the number one song. I think it overtook Nice For What.
It did. It takes a lot to knock Drake off of your perch, off his perch, unless you're Rihanna.
Definitely.
I don't want to hear about this ever again. Not even when you tell me that he's better than his friends.
You hate when your own words come back to bite you.
But it's the number one song in the country. Drake has been between Nice For What and God's Plan. He's had a number one song I think since February. So that's an accomplishment in itself, just musically, but politically charged songs from black people don't get that high on the charts. Fair. They don't. They are, you know, obviously disparaged. They are, you know, quelled, so to speak. Artists even a lot of times end up getting, you know, kind of blackballed, you know, for making, you know, songs like that, and they don't get the radio play or they don't get the spins that they would get for a normal record because, again, the powers that be don't want an uprising. And I don't mean an uprising, you know, physically or violently, socially or, you know, intellectually. And you want to talk about thought-provoking imagery. This Is America was extremely powerful. And, you know, by now, you know, I'm sure everybody has, you know, written and read, you know, their think pieces and everything on how they feel about it. But Wes, I want to specifically see what your thoughts were on something that I don't think anybody saw coming at this time, but it was probably exactly what we needed.
Yeah, like from that aspect, like I didn't anticipate it at all. And then after seeing it, I was impressed. I thought it was something that was needed. I felt like the song itself, like lyrically, wasn't anything really special. But the imagery in the video itself,
actually, it wasn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't. But I will say it slaps. It slaps.
From the music aspect, the most important, most impressing part for myself would be the vast
the slap-a-tune
quality of ad-libs that were brought in. I believe I heard a number of rappers I enjoy from the trap variety sending their ad-libs in. I heard my favorite rapper at the current time, Blockboy JB, had a couple ad-libs. Heard some from 21 Savage. I believe Quavo might have been in there as well.
Yeah, Quavo for sure.
I saw a list the other day, but
it's that's part of the idea of the song as well, is you know the whole trap vibe, and you know, but honestly, if it didn't have that trap switch up from you know the South African you know theme, if it didn't switch over and then switch back and everything, the song probably wouldn't be popular. I really don't think people would even really listen to it. And that's part of the point that he was trying to make and you know, in putting the song out at all. So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interject. Continue.
Oh, no. It was a well-timed and well-put interjection. But imagery-wise, I thought it was great. I thought it was very, very... I've seen like a lot of theories on what exactly he was trying to say. I don't think it was super duper complex. I thought it was very palatable in what he was trying to portray. I saw a couple not necessarily think pieces, but a couple thoughts on people were a little upset that in like the scenarios when she was shooting people, that he was shooting people, him being a black man, when a lot of the instances that we're seeing are white individuals shooting people of color and as well as other white individuals. But that was the only kind of hold up that I kind of saw and kind of agree with a little bit. But other than that, it dealt a lot with what's going on. And this is America. A lot of what we see right now, what's prevalent in society. So I thought it was a good piece to kind of speak about society without actually going, having a think piece or having him sit down and talk about it. It was a good visual aid. I hope people, outside of our culture could see it and take it for what it is.
Definitely. It's you know, we could again wax poetic about, you know, something as deep as this for hours, and it was deep but not complex, which is I think is the perfect recipe for success. You can't get too hoteppy, you know, you can't get too deep in your one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish bag, because fish, people are either tune you out or you know they'll they just won't be able to understand, you know, some of, and you know it's all fine, you know to get into, you know, the Pan-African Pan-African paradigm, trying to discuss what's going on in the world, but outside of the intellectual, outside of the intellectual realm, you got to make it accessible for everybody. And that's exactly what he did. But again, he made it accessible, but he gave us just enough. He showed us everything that we needed to see. Obviously the biggest thing was the gun violence. You know, the kids in the, dancing with him, you know, representing school shootings. You got the choir that he sprayed, represent the Charleston shooting. You got, you know, the whole holding a gun to the back of the dude's head. You know, that
in the illest of Alvin Ailey poses.
Alvin Ailey, Jim Crow, the Jim Crow, you know, imagery, you know, that he dropped there and everything. And it just, it went so far and it went so deep. But It was a perfect take. Just getting into, as I mentioned, kind of not being able to, kind of having the traditional African, culture and songs and dance getting drowned out by the trap music, by the trap beats, by the ad libs, showing that, that's what we represent. That's what we represent to the mainstream. That's what the fuck we are. And it came at a perfect time. Like it's brutal. It makes you uncomfortable. It makes you think. It makes you explore themes and ideas that you don't want to think about, the stuff that you try to get away from, the reasons that you don't turn on the news anymore, the reasons why, you may not, why we're so desensitized to so many things. And he took it on the main stage on SNL on Saturday Night Live, and he said, "Hey, look at this shit. Look at this shit. You ain't turn away. Watch it." And man, sometimes that's what you need.
I said, that's what I appreciate too. Like, he is clearly one of the hottest people in the entertainment business today, and for him to put this out at this time with the clout that he, I hate using that fucking word, with his social standing in his field, to put this video out with this meaning, I thought it was great for him. It was a great step, and I appreciate him doing that. And I like to see more artists who, when they get to a certain level, put out content and messaging that kind of mirrors this as well. Not necessarily just like this, but just more stuff that opens people's eyes and could help us try to get a better understanding of other people's cultures and what they're going through, to help us become a better society. The more you know.
The more you know with the stars. So once again, shout out to this generation's, don't want to say revolutionary, but he is someone who is using the only thing that you could ask for or expect from any black person is to use your platform to instigate change, not just instigate change physically, but to instigate a change in attitude, which, once it starts permeating the fabric of the culture, gets passed down from generation to generation to generation. And that's how change actually comes. And so without a doubt, shout out to Donald Glover, Childish Gambino, much appreciated. Definitely
one time for Troy Barnes from Community.
Yes sir. And he definitely deserves the number one spot on the Billboard charts right now. But one man in particular that you happened to mention, that you caught his ad libs on the record, was one Block Boy JB.
Why?
Block Boy JB, kind of came onto the scene, just out of nowhere, the shoot dance. I think, that's a cool dance, whatever. He's a one hit wonder. He'll be out of our face really soon. But nah. That nigga's here to fucking stay.
Block Boy has put the controller down, and he is not playing with you niggas in the 2018.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I remember obviously hearing Shoot, thinking, I really enjoy this song, not thinking it was going to turn into a cultural phenomenon, not thinking that the Shoot dance was going to become the new default dance for black people in America. Gotta love our default dances, our two steps, our duggies, our jigs.
It changes
every, yeah.
Our it changes every we got the staples, but then the tertiary one changes every six months or so. So I'm enjoying the time of this. But yeah, so he came out with Shoot. Like, we heard Shoot. No one really expected him to last. And we heard Rover.
But once he threw 21 on it, is when it was like, all right, okay, this nigga not playing. And then of course, you throw You drive, look alive, look alive. And then all of a sudden, I always say, here, my rule is, if somebody can give me three songs that I legitimately enjoy, I will give their album a chance, for sure. And he gave me those three. He dropped his album, his debut album.
It's a mixtape.
It's a I didn't even know.
I literally just found that out the other day. I was all talking to album talk, and I found it's a mixtape.
Well, he dropped his first official Apple Music mixtape, Semi, last week, or 2 weeks ago now. And when I say bangers from front to back, I mean bangers from front to back. And it's so perfect because he don't be talking about shit, but he talks about everything at the same damn time.
It's a skill and a talent, and he needs to be commended for it. Block Boy, a lot of the songs are short, which is good for me.
Perfect.
My attention span is not that long.
Nope.
His one-liners are getting up there. I might have to put him in the Rising Stars challenge for rapping, because he's doing his thing.
I will give you a lot more than that, my good man. Block Boy JB for my hot take of the week. Block Boy JB is the next Jeezy. Y'all think I'm playing, all right? I am strapping my support to this nigga, and he is going through the fucking roof. All right, my man's got Memphis behind him. All right, he got all y'all niggas talking about Dolph and Moneybagg. Yo, fuck that. He got the groundswell. All right, he got the support. He got the support. It's here. It's behind him. He got the support. It's behind him. He is speaking. He is speaking on shit that the average person doesn't understand, but we want to understand it. We want to understand it so badly. We want to understand it so fucking badly. And he's putting it there. He is being himself unapologetically. He is dropping whatever fucking songs he wants. And he raps good when he feels like it.
Well, he raps good all the time. Not when he feels like it. I would consider myself probably top three in the world as Black Boy fans. And even I can't say that I think he's going to be the next Jeezy. I can see him being similar to having him a career similar to Dolph, where he puts out great projects and has a song every couple
nope,
of months.
You're wrong. Kevin Bacon was not in Footloose.
I just don't know if I can elevate him to that stat. I mean, I would love to see him get there. He said he rhymed face three times and said, "I rhymed face three times because I couldn't rhyme." No one's giving that type of honesty. Like Jay-Z, 444, that's cool. That's not that.
Since Song Cry?
Since Song Cry. That's honesty in your raps, and he's keeping it real. Very gang-affiliated raps. I can support that 100%. Myself not being a gang, I definitely enjoy
gang.
Feeling like I'm in a gang. But I do wish the utmost success, and I enjoy listening to his music. But to say he's going to be Jeezy, I think you might be
That's fine.
This incredible ration on this motherfucker right here.
That's fine when I, you know, become Black Boy's personal DJ and we are touring the country and we are doing shows at Obama's house. Don't say that I wasn't behind supporting very early on in the game.
I'll definitely pull this tape, and I'll apologize, because I'll clearly be wrong at that point if you're performing songs such as Left Hand and Nike Swoosh.
And well, don't forget about Asian Bitch. Don't forget Asian about that.
Bitch. I got an Asian Bitch next to fried rice.
That's, in front of that song is extremely problematic. I would like that is one of the more problematic records that I've heard in a long time.
I mean, Black Boy's my guy. Fuck with the mixtape, but there's a couple lyrics that are a little questionable.
Yeah,
I chose to ignore them for the greater good in this time. Yeah, but hopefully I don't have to recall back and reconcile.
No,
what I heard.
No, not at all. So that dropped on the same day as Shrimp 3, also known as Shrimp Life 3, also known as Shrimp 3: The End of Shrimp Gang. I truly believe like this is the final Ray Shimmer project. There was a lot went on behind the scenes, because creatively, the god Uncle Jimmy, now Papa Jimmy, shout out to him and his firstborn, Slim Jimmy and Sway Lee could not get on the same page creatively. It's kind of, it's looking very, it's looking, it was looking very Beatles-esque. It was looking very Left Eye and TLC. Like, they couldn't, during the creative process to the album, it was documented that they just couldn't get on the same page and felt like they had to put out a triple album in order to get out all of the music that they needed to get out.
I definitely feel that. But listening to all three projects, I feel the joint project was pretty good.
It was, and that's the crazy part.
Yeah, like you're hearing all the stories and whatnot about the disconnect between the two. That I felt like the joint project was probably the second. It's fighting for the first spot of all three that came out. I think clearly Jim Tro was the album that did it.
Yeah.
Jimmy,
he finally proved himself. He stepped out from behind Sway's shadow. And I mean, you know, for anyone who was not hip to the Young Eardrummers gang, their album, again, dropped on the same day as Black Boy JB. It is a triple album with one disc being an entire Slim Jimmy album known as Jim Tro. Basically the middle or the overlapping Venn diagram disc, Shrimp 3. And on this far left, Sway Lee's album, Swaycation. So basically, I think 9 songs each. Yep. 3 albums, so 27 songs total, but having 3 completely different projects within one, something that we have never seen before, not even from the likes of Schizophrenic Cassidy or anyone else.
I definitely didn't see the Dim Franchise Boys triple disc popping, or I would have.
But you know, I agree with your point that surprisingly, for as much as we've heard about disconnect and breakups, and honestly, up until I think around the time that not Power Glide came out, but maybe the time that Teed Up came out, we still didn't think that it was going to be a dual album with both of them on it. We had no idea. We just heard so many different conflicting stories for so long. So I just think that speaks to their chemistry. Even when they are having creative differences, at the end of the day, they are blood brothers.
So they're blood brothers. Yeah. So creative differences aside, and they've had two full projects together of not perfection, but greatness, consistent greatness together. So when they get together, you know that even if things are off, they're going to at least give you a few bangers. And that's what the joint project did for us. You got Power Glide's a banger. Teed Up goes close. I fuck with close heavy. Weekend. I'm getting to it.
Cosina, up in my Cosina weekend. Up
my Cosina weekend. My personal favorite from the joint album, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man. Which is a goddamn vibe.
Which I actually posed a question to West the other day if it had Black Beatles potential. I will say that it doesn't, simply because it almost feels like they're trying to force the Black Beatles aesthetic now. And not saying they're trying to force it, like that's somewhat naturally them, but musically trying to force the Black Beatles aesthetic. And it's kind of, what's probably going to end up being is one of my worst hot takes or tweets from the archives of all time. Me stating that Oh My was going to be the next No Hands. Oh My was a great song. I'm not going to pull any punches on that, but I think I was very excited being in college, riding off of the high of No Hands in its prime. And I saw a song from that also had Roscoe Dash on it, as well. And I was like, you know what? This has some of the same sparse elements that No Hands has. So this is going to be No Hands. And I feel the same way about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You feel that way about Marvin Gaye and Chardonnay? You just throwing Roscoe Dash on, in any collab on a, that's on a beat, is the next party jam. I'm glad I didn't. Glad I didn't tweet.
But I will say that Dirty Jethro thought that Marvin Gaye and Chardonnay was going to be one of the songs of the century, but it did not. Yeah,
we gotta get him on here and just have him explain just everything that he's.
Next episode 7 of Beware the L's is gonna be Dirty James sitting here for an hour, basically like Dave Chappelle inside the actor's studio, just explaining his rationale for everything that he believes in life.
It's between two friends.
It's basically gonna be a JR TED talk.
Yeah,
essentially.
Between two ferns is gonna be between two Bacardi Limon bottles. But
I saw that this weekend. Oh man. Shout out to James. I love that ball bastard more than anything.
The drive. But so yeah, we kind of touched on two of the albums. We kind of felt the same way about the third album, which was Swaycation, Sway Lee's individual album, solo album. But we kind of felt that at least on my end, it was slightly underwhelming. I went into it. I feel now that I've had a chance to simmer on it and given it about a week or 2 weeks or so listening, I went in with super high expectations. Being that I felt Sway Lee was clearly the better and more polished artist of the two, between him and his brother. I was looking forward. I had Swaycation as in my head one of the albums of the year. By itself, but it was slightly underwhelming. It had a few songs on there. Now that I've sat with it a while, a few songs that are good, but I felt like he kind of played it safe. He didn't really take a whole bunch of chances that I felt like he could have been afforded, given his status and how people feel about him. He kind of took the safe route, but he did kind of step out and show that, hey, if he wants to go this R&B route, he can kind of do it and do it well. Would have liked to heard more, but I was a little underwhelmed, but still enjoyed it as a project.
Agreed. Overall, Sway Lee will be fine, but I don't think that this is what Mike Will or anybody who's a part of the Sway Lee machine, as I call it, expected to happen on this project. Sway Lee has been kind of getting groomed as that next guy in the hip hop game for a while. That next versatile guy, who can rap, is always gonna turn the party up, but he got the melodies, the harmonies, he can sing well enough to carry a lot of songs. And you can sing well enough as a rapper to be able to carry songs in 2018, that is star power. Essentially, and he's been, I mean, we've heard him on so many songs, at this point, so many hooks that he's murked, it's almost too many to name. But you could tell they've kind of been grooming him. I would say over the last year or so, you kind of, his collaboration been very strategic. Honestly, one of the worst songs I've ever heard Sway Lee on, Bars of Soap, ended up on Madden 18, just to try to prove to people that Sway can eat, and he kind of can't, but that's what they want you to believe. All right, so once the industry decides that they're going to push somebody, it's just like wrestling. Once Vince McMahon and WWE decides they want to get behind somebody and push him and try to make him or her into a star, that's what they're going to do, regardless of whether it's really deserved or not. And I'm not saying it's not deserved for Sway Lee, because it definitely is, but I think this album showed that, hey, he got overshadowed by Slim Jimmy for probably the first time in their music careers.
Yeah, and I mean, not necessarily a bad thing, because they're brothers, and they both want to see each other do good. But yeah, this was definitely Slim Jimmy's coming out party, very similarly to the Migos project that dropped, and we saw Takeoff kind of take that
Takeoff,
who I've been saying since 2000, like 14, 15, that he's the best rapping Migo. But that's another conversation for another time. But it was similar to that vein that we saw someone who was considered one of the back portions of a group come forward and hold their own in a project. So it was definitely dope to see. It was definitely all three albums. I enjoyed all three albums thoroughly. I'm definitely going to revisit them, especially more once this weather breaks finally. It's consistently warm.
Oh, it ain't broke down there in the dirty
beat. Right now, this whole week is like rain, but I'm about to bust my romper out probably this weekend, and
live your truth, King.
I seen the time hop update. I was tweeting about rompers this time last year. Never.
It's time. In case y'all unaware, Fashion Nova dropping a men's line in town for the summer. Ooh. All right. So
you whores and fucks, beware.
Niggas is out here. Niggas is out here. But overall, shout out again. Just shout out to the Shrimp Gang for making another quality project. No matter how it ended up coming together. I still remember the first time I heard them dudes at a Pusha T concert. Not even them performing, but just hearing the DJ dropping No Flex Zone. And gosh, that was May, I think, of 2014. And they still out here going strong 4 years later, which is fucking hard to do. So shout out to them. Definitely. Shout out to the Shrimp. Shout out to Jeezy. Black Boy JB, in case you didn't know what the J stood for in Black Boy JB, it stands for Jeezy, in case anybody was, confused.
That's actually incorrect, but I will let you run with it. Go ahead.
Before we wrap up episode 6 of Beware the L's, obviously we can't get out of here before we hand out some fucking L's. So the L's have been aplenty the last couple weeks. Considered a few different L's to hand out, but I actually have two, so I'm going to let you get this shit off first, my G.
Oh, well, look at you just hogging all the L's. But myself personally, like I said, you spoke to it, there's a lot of L's going on. I chose to use my L of the week on I forget her name. I believe I saw it online, but I forgot. I don't feel like looking up right now. But it's going to be the lady who called the police.
Oh my God.
On the black couple barbecuing in Oakland. My L of the week for her is because, one, you're hating, dog. Like, so if you're not familiar with the story, there was a black couple family that was barbecuing at a park in Oakland. Apparently they were barbecuing in a non-charcoal barbecuing area. Apparently there's a separate area for charcoal barbecuing. And this white lady, I assume was, not minding her business and just came over to intervene. I assume she tried to take authority and tell the black people to move and they said no. So she got on the phone and called the cops, to inform them that black people were grilling in an area where they shouldn't be grilling. Actually, pardon me, they were grilling in an area where they need to be grilling something else.
Yes.
So she stood and waited for the police for 2 hours. One of the Black Eyes wives, who was a white woman herself, started to film, and there was a interaction for them going on for a time. Mentioned the cops came, and they really didn't do anything because
the white tears. I still don't understand why she started crying. Like, I didn't see anything that happened that would have caused anyone to actually start. You feel me? Like, I don't know. Obviously, she was looking for sympathy, but lot of times when white people start faking white tears, it's like they try to go up and they try to, like, get in some black person's face and they get stolen and then start crying. But that didn't even really happen. She just, like, just started crying out of frustration for being racist. I don't know. Like,
I think it was more frustration that she called the cops and they took all that time to get there. Because if I'm white and I call the cops, those motherfuckers better be here by the time I'm phoning. Because my taxes pay their salary.
Facts.
So yes, my L is for her because after this incident, she went viral, clearly, and she has now become a meme. If you haven't seen the picture of her, I'm just go on your timeline. If your timeline's popping, if your timeline's whack, follow some more people, including Beware the L's, and you'll be able to find her. I've seen pictures of her. I've seen her calling the police on the. on Soul Train.
I saw her in the back of the SUV with Suge Knight and Tupac. I saw that one too.
Jesus, I didn't see that one. I saw her calling the police on Martin Luther King while he was delivering his "I Have a Dream" speech. There was plenty of pictures of her going around. The funny one I just saw literally before we started recording was her. She called the police on Kanye and said, "No, he's with us."
Oh boy.
So Kanye. There's that. my L of the week. I forget her name, but I believe she was a professor. I want to say at Stanford. So shout out to Stanford and Andrew Luck and all them doing what they do.
She's probably a professor of raisins and potato salad.
I'm pulling up right now. Her class she teaches is, can I touch your hair? No, I'm going to touch it anyway. that's my all the week Oakland barbecue lady. She deserved it.
And the best part is, black people came back to that same spot a couple days later and threw an even bigger barbecue.
Only thing missing was E40.
And Tupac, God rest his soul, looking for a plate. Shout out to Poetic Justice, as well.
I thought this was an anti-Tupac podcast. I was misinformed.
never, bruh. But my L's, got a couple of them because, you know, L's, you know, tend to come together. You know, you don't normally just get one, you know, just one L that everybody just talks about for, you know, days and days and days and weeks and weeks and weeks. Nah, it's always multiple. So my first L goes to a Lil, and it goes to Lil Tay. 9-year-old, quote unquote Instagram star, who kicks it with Woe Vicky.
Woe Vicky, Tekashi affiliated.
Yeah,
Chief Keef affiliated. I think that's how she came. Yeah, how she got on.
Yeah, Glow Gang affiliated. Chief Keef affiliated. Basically, if you've never seen this little ignorant ass child before, she gets on Instagram talking a bunch of shit, holding the money phones to her ear, these big ass mansions, sitting in big ass cars, talking about calling everybody broke bitches, and talking about how, you know, I started trapping when I was 6.
She is a flex for the year.
And that's how I built the lifestyle that I have now. If you would know her, even if you don't know her by name, you know her by face and you know her irritating ass voice. But the L not only falls on her, but falls on her mama, who got fired from her job, working for a reputable real estate agency, luxury real estate agency in Canada. Because basically, obviously, because everything's fake on Instagram, the money that she had and the houses that she was in, even the cars that she that Lil Tay would be quote unquote flexing in, calling us broke bitches in, don't belong to her. Don't even belong to her mama. They belong to her mama's clients. So, her mom's got booted, straight out the fucking door.
You hate to see it.
You know, she had it coming, obviously. That's what you get for being a terrible fucking parent. But even with that, Lil Tay is still on Instagram. So maybe it really wasn't her ill as much as it was her mom's ill. She probably called her mom a bitch and took her phone back from her and stole some money out of her purse and hopped right back on the gram. So the L really goes to Lil Tay's mother.
You gotta be Lil Tay's mom in this situation, because Lil Tay's gonna prosper regardless whether we wanted to prosper.
Unfortunately,
or not.
Unfortunately, maybe she can get her friend Woe Vicky some help, because I think she is she's got some issues going on upstairs.
Shout out to Austin Coley, number one Woe Vicky fan,
huge supporter of Beware the L's Pot. The racially indeterminable Austin Coley is our guy. But my other L is going to go to somebody who you do not know from name, I'm sure. But her name is Nicole Arbour. And she is the white woman who made the quote-unquote women's edit of Childish Gambino's that we spoke on earlier, This Is America. And It was so ironic, because this is exactly what Donald Glover wanted. He wanted to prove all the points that he made in that song by once again having it appropriated, having it, you know, stolen, having it, you know, white privileged away into a white woman, essentially once again trying to, you know, equate black struggle to white woman struggle. And once again, not the same thing. Women have it very hard. Black people have it horrible. Black women have it the worst.
So yeah, Nicole Arbour with a big swing and a miss. I didn't even I heard the of her video, didn't see it. saw little clips here and there, nothing more than like maybe like 5-10 seconds. Didn't even hear any vocals behind it because I wasn't interested in hearing none of that nonsense. But yeah,
it was a visual representation of green bean casserole,
and that's not for me. So shout out to you.
A lot of whack lyrics. A lot of
bars either.
You got a dream. The roofies got into you. Don't catch you climbing up, cause they'll get you hoeing up. These were her bars. You know, and once again,
never stream her. Get her all the way the fuck out of here with them weak ass bars.
She and a lot of trying to equate struggles, comparative struggling. She's in a black hoodie and some baggy ripped jeans, saying skirt throughout the whole song. She also believes that America needs more versions of the song. She thinks that every disenfranchised group in America needs to have their own version of This Is America, and this is exactly what Donald Glover wanted. It is lame as fuck.
Wes G wanted, goddamn it.
It's lame as fuck. You are essentially trying to co-opt someone else's art, another culture's art. I don't know how much time Donald Glover put into that, but I assume it was months, maybe not even getting close to a year of planning to be able to put something like that together and then have it ready to be released on Saturday Night Live as well. And you know, basically, to you, Nicole Arbour, I'm actually very glad that you made some fucking hot garbage headphones in the trash can ass shit for us to dissect and discuss, because you are the problem. You are the problem. You can't let black people have our black people problems. And nothing. That's all it is. You
can't have nothing, man.
You can go and you can, you know, talk about your white feminist struggle. You can talk about it, I don't know, you know, with an Uggs rally. I don't know, like, you know, over Starbucks. I'm not sure, whatever, you know, whatever speaks to you, that's fine. But make sure that it speaks to you. Because this whole concept, this whole art, it does not speak to you. Rachel Dolezal, it does not represent you. You cannot identify with it. You don't understand. And to all white people who feel like, who constantly want to tell us, I understand, stop using the terms I understand and I identify with. Take those terms out of your vocabulary. You don't understand. What you can do is empathize. You can learn. You can be, you can learn, you can support, you can, you know, you can be that resource. You can be that white person that because once again, without, unfortunately, in America, if we're gonna be completely honest, we, even if every black person in this country decided to unite, it would be very powerful. But without some type of cooperation from the other side, we're not gonna bust down the majority. And that has kind of and that has been once again, because this is not our country, that has kind of been the truth from the beginning. So there are, yeah, sometimes we need help. Black people are fucking amazing on every level, but yeah, sometimes we need some white people in our corner, just like sometimes white people need black people in their corner in certain situations in which we hold the chips. Since y'all hold the chips as the dominant, you know, the dominant group, majority group in America, we do need some of y'all to say, hey, I'm about to do the right fucking thing, and I'm going to help, and I'm going to help, and I'm going to help stand up for these people. And it's much, much, much easier to do when you do it from, I'm white and I don't get it, instead of doing it from, who, my struggle is just as bad as yours. Or you do it, or you do it from mm-hmm. the, hey, I want to be black too, I get it. Stop it. Shut the fuck up. Nicole Arbour, Rachel Dolezal too, like I said, I feel for your family. I feel for your kids, but I ain't got no sympathy for you, my G. Learn your role, or as The Rock would say, know your role, shut your mouth, and figure out how to be helpful and figure out how to make an impact without trying to, once again, appropriate. You can help without appropriating, essentially.
That's what we're asking for allies. Like you said, empathize with the struggle. Don't try to compare struggles, because that gets us nowhere. Empathize, learn, grow, help with what you can, and don't be a candy ass jabroni for real.
As one of the greatest people in America would say, it's the eyebrow raising, trailblazing, eyebrow raising. The Rock says, know your role and shut your fucking mouth. So that is my word of advice to white people this week. And when we reconvene for episode 7 of the podcast, you can tell us what you learned by not trying to be what the fuck you're not for a week. All right. And of course, this is not an indictment on all white people. We are speaking to, if this doesn't apply to you, then it doesn't apply to you. We are speaking to a very specific subset of people, which perpetuate a very, very, very big issue that we have in this country in terms of appropriation. So, on that note, Rachel Dolezal, fuck off. Nicole Arbour, fuck off. David Duke, fuck off. Well, I feel like I can go so deep with this.
If you're going down that path, for hours.
David Duke, fuck off.
You might as well not even get started on that, because then we're going to end up.
Steve Bannon, fuck off. I forgot about you neither. You walking fucking skin tag. All right, you know what? It's time to wrap it up. Because I'm about to get very militant in this bit. So,
I can hear it coming.
So we'll go ahead and wrap up episode 6 of Beware the L's. Thank you for hanging in there with us once again. Follow us on all the socials. Follow the pod at Beware the L's. Follow your boy at Uptown Ace Boogie on Twitter, Instagram, and all that other good shit. I'm gonna go ahead. You know, I got real militant because I'm black, y'all. Black, y'all. I'm blackity black, and I'm black, y'all. I'm going to let my esteemed co-host, Wes, go ahead and sign us the fuck out.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this has been episode 6. I'm your boy, Ain't That Wes, on all social medias. Like Austin said, make sure you follow Beware the L's on everything. Make sure you like the podcast. Make sure you follow the Twitter. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you give us a rating. Make sure you tell your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your cousin, your girlfriend, your side chick, her side chick, her friend, everybody. Just let people know what's going on. We're trying to keep giving you guys these fire content on a regular, somewhat consistent basis. You know, life does happen from time to time, but we're here for you guys. Let us know what's going on. Let us know how you feel. Let us know what you think, and just keep fucking with us. You know what I'm saying? So keep fucking with us. We're going to keep fucking with y'all. So straight like that, Beware the L's, episode 6. We are out.